a station needed a news director in Green Bay. And I went to Green Bay, and I got the job as the news director.
I am still in love with photojournalism, and I love photo editing as well.
The demonstrators are on one side in Grant Park, and the National Guard has barbed wire-covered jeeps in the front, and they had bayonets, and they were the go-between. And the reporters, including me, we were kept in the middle of Michigan Avenue.
I feel honored to be able to use my camera and participate and tell a story.
My legacy is that we got rid of the no-compete contracts for broadcasters in Illinois. That's the law, and I'm so proud of that.
That's Dick Kay and Karen Kring, our guests last week on Andrea and the Reporters. Thank you so much for being with us. 707, greatest city in the world, Chicago, Illinois on 720 WGN. Tonight on the program, two more award-winning Chicago journalists. One, you see him every weeknight on CBS2 Chicago, anchoring the evening news at 5, 6, and 10. An investigative reporter who has won more than 80 awards for his reporting and writing, which have even led to new policies and prosecutions in the state of Illinois. Before that, he spent time in Detroit, Indianapolis, Grand Rapids, and Lansing. He is Brad Edwards from CBS2 Chicago. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for having me. Thank you for rushing over. I know you did the news and then hopped the cab and then came right over here, so
yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely, thrilled to be here.
Thank you for being here. Other big guest tonight, a Chicago author, reporter, former producer for big-name Chicago radio hosts like Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer and John Records Landecker, to name just a few. He's a media critic for the Illinois Entertainer, a podcaster, and has written no fewer than 8 books. His latest is called Every Cub Ever. We have a lot to talk about with our two amazing guests tonight. Welcome, Rick Kampfer. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you both. I think your two worlds collided today. Today is like the Super Bowl of news and sports with the news that we had in Chicago today.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it was absolutely a collision with Ross now taking officially the helm. And then you've got, you know, the Ricketts, the owners, also then canoodling with the president in town visiting. So yeah, you have a world colliding show on tonight.
Truly, I did call this is the Super Bowl of news days and sports days, mm-hmm. in Chicago. Describe a typical day like this in your newsroom, Brad.
I mean, a typical day like this is everyone is ready and everyone is ready for everything to change. Initially, we thought Mr. Trump would come in town and we thought potentially he would have his fundraiser and then do his speech to the International Association of Chiefs of Police. We were working our sources all weekend. Of course, there is major concern over the future of Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson with recent dealings, you know, whether they be involving his involvement with the Laquan McDonald case or then found passed out and slumped over behind the wheel of his own vehicle. So we knew he was going to skip out on President Trump's speech today. We didn't know what President Trump would say, but our insiders said he would lambaste Chicago. Indeed, he did that, and it just, of course, developed throughout the day amidst a teacher strike, amidst the naming of David Ross as the new Cubs head coach.
Wow, and yeah, and again, Super Bowl for you, too, in the sports world.
Absolutely, although he did not lambaste Chicago.
No.
A little different in that regard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did think it was interesting that the Ricketts chose to go to see Donald Trump as opposed to going to the David Ross. I know Laura Ricketts was there.
Yeah.
But I think she was the only Ricketts was at the press conference today.
At the David Ross press conference.
Yeah. Interesting. The, you know, Daddy Ricketts and then Todd Ricketts, of course, probably to the two most politically involved Republicans, opted to not go to the Ross press conference, which you couldn't have a bigger day and a more important time to have a press conference as a baseball team than today. So then for them to opt to go to the Trump fundraiser says something.
It does.
I watched the whole Trump press conference, then I watched the Eddie Johnson rebuke. Were you surprised, I guess, was the sentiment in the newsroom, were you surprised that Trump went after Eddie Johnson the way that he did?
No.
And with the force that he did? I mean, that went on for 15 minutes, Brad.
Yeah, I was frankly not surprised. I thought he would. I was surprised at the length. but not at the tone of it. We know he has not necessarily ill will, but he likes to use Chicago as kind of a whipping child when it comes to violence and the scourge of violence and drugs and, you know, things that are going wrong. And he sees this as, you know, probably the bluest of blue places when it comes to liberalism. So we knew he would use this opportunity to kick Chicago around a little bit. And we knew he would probably take a few pokes at Eddie Johnson, probably not to the point, though, where then Superintendent Eddie Johnson would have to get up and hold his own press conference.
With his entire command staff standing behind him.
With his entire command staff. I mean, yeah. A pretty remarkable moment when you're thinking this should have simply been the president coming in town to speak to all the leaders of major police departments throughout the country.
Okay, Rick, now a question for you about today's David Ross press conference. Were you surprised at the selection of David Ross?
I was a little surprised. I think the way Theo Epstein was talking at the end of the year about how the Cubs needed a little kick as opposed to, you know, a good friend, and then he basically hired someone who was a friend of, you know, half the players on the team. So I didn't quite understand that, but at the press conference today, he said that Ross is a strong leader and that he is the type of teammate that would have kicked him anyway. And so they think that that will translate. And, you know, we've got to give it a shot. We've got to see what happens.
Well, we will see what happens. Hopefully another World Series victory
That'd
in Chicago.
Nice.
That would be fantastic.
It's going to be fascinating. I'm really fascinated about how that dynamic will work from, I mean, a beloved Rossi to now. I don't know how you make that transition. I also don't know how you make that transition to teammate, beloved cohort, to then respectability of coach. I mean, because you got to realize we're working with these, you know, kind of millennial types right now.
I mean,
maybe that's buying into that, though. Maybe that's buying into that. You know, these are kids. You know, sometimes they are looking for more of a buddy coach than. I mean, what did you think it
well,
could work?
Well, I think that's what was the biggest complaint about Joe Madden was that he was too much of their buddy and that he was just, you know, a player's coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at the talent from top to bottom, mm-hmm. I think the Cubs have had the best roster in the division for the last, you know, 5 years. It hasn't always turned out that way when it comes to wins and losses. So you think maybe it's time for somebody to come in there and you know, knock people around a little bit.
All right, we're talking to Rick Camphor and Brad Edwards. You are so into each of your crafts, and you've been doing this a long time. I could call you veterans, even though we're all at a very young age. But
very.
I can call you guys veterans. Mm-hmm. How'd you get interested in the business?
I initially, when I went to college, I was going to be a teacher because that was kind of the family trade. But, I mean, I initially got interested in the business. It was very, I mean, I remember it like yesterday. It was every Sunday night we would have reading time as a family. And my brother and I were probably very early cases of ADD. So we'd spend that half hour of reading time kind of nitpicking each other and throwing things across the room. And then at the end of that half an hour, 60 Minutes would come on. And just watching that and seeing the storytelling and the life-changing reporting they did, you know, every Sunday totally sucked me in. And I thought, you know, not necessarily that's what I want to do when I grow up, but in some way, shape, or form, that's what I'd like to do when I grow up.
And that's how you, is that, do you think, where you got your investigative knack?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the accountability, but also, I mean, I'm huge into, like, you can have a great set of facts, you can have a great set of data, but if you don't have a good story that surrounds it, and it's not well told, and it's not well told with working with, you know, great visual artists like photojournalists to tell a story with compelling visuals, then it doesn't translate. And, you know, that's the gold standard, and it's really so cool now, you know, to work for an organization that is a part of CBS. I mean, and nothing, nobody does television better than CBS, particularly on Sundays, whether it's bookended by Sunday morning or 60 Minutes, you know, in the evening. It's a fantastic place to work where we still believe in those things.
I still record 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You do. Writing is so key. And you've transitioned beautifully, too, from radio and from producing and reporting now to writing and being an author.
Yeah, that to me, I always was a writer. And even when I was in radio, what drew me to radio was the writing. Mm-hmm. I started writing when I was at the University of Illinois.
Yeah, ILO.
PGU Radio.
There you go.
Right. A couple of U of I's. Uh-huh. And Spartan here, so we're a Big Ten.
That's right, oh, Big Ten. We're all fantastic. In the family. There we go.
I worked for Stephen Geary and I worked for John Records Landecker, and those are two big-time shows, and I did a lot of writing, you know, comedy bits and things like that, where my job was to come up with material for the show. And so it was a very natural transition then to go into writing and reporting. And now I report on the media, which I've been part of for many years. And so it was a very easy transition.
It's Rick Camphor and it's Brad Edwards and it's Andrea and the Reporters. Quick break, and we will talk much, much more with Brad and Rick after this on 720 WGN. It's 720 on 720 WGN. Rick Camphor, Brad Edwards, my guest tonight on Andrea and the Reporters, talking about how they got their start. And do you guys remember your first jobs, your first gigs, your first stories, kind of the early days?
I mean, I do. It was pretty, it was, you know, community television. And then I remember kind of my first big break. I was in Lansing, Michigan, going to Michigan State, and I had made the transition, really decided. I went into teaching initially because I'm like, I don't think I can do that journalism thing. I mean, I don't think I'm good enough. And when I finally dedicated myself to it, I started as a part-time reporter at the CBS affiliate WLNS in Lansing, Michigan. And when I graduated there, I was promoted to weekend anchor. So I it was just fascinating at first, and it was fascinating growth, and it was, you know, kind of a dream right out of the gate. Like, so many journalism students have to work so hard to kind of get that first chance, and, you know, often, too often, some of them don't. So to get that right out of the gate in Lansing, and ended up being just kind of a fun ride since then.
And did you know you wanted to come to Chicago? Was that
Mean, this has been the dream.
This is
you know, and people who have known it's been the dream. I'm from Grand Rapids, so we would, you know, our trips in the summer wouldn't be to see Tigers games. We'd come to see the Cubs, you know, and we'd come and watch, you know, back in the era of Dunston and Sandberg and the Hawk. And so it would be our annual trip. And then we'd have, radio legend in Grand Rapids, Kevin Matthews, went from Grand Rapids to Chicago. And I just remember hearing about it. And it's not like there was the internet then. I could pick him up. But I thought, you know, if he could do it, maybe one day. And then eventually made it back in my hometown of Grand Rapids at Wood TV. And I was there at the same time and became very close with one Ginger Z. Who I'm still dear friends with. Yeah. And then
she's one of the best.
She
I
did
think.
It.
And, one of the best.
So the fact that it's happened, I mean, listen, most days are a grind, like for everyone else. It's hard. It's hard work. It's hard picking up every call you get from a source. But, you know, occasionally I find myself, you know, walking downtown, walking on Daly Plaza, and, like, I work there, and it's like, man, this is neat.
I know. And you find yourself stopping and taking pictures of the buildings and putting them on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I work
buildings
in this
that
city.
You see every day.
Yeah.
You know?
You know? It's so true.
Remarkable.
In such a different light. Rick, how about you? First gig?
So it's funny, you mentioned Kevin Matthews. One of the first gigs I had was at The Loop in Chicago back in the late 80s. And
sure.
Kevin had just started there. And I helped out with his comedy shows. And my job, and this is very glamorous, my job was to get the chainsaw that he used for a bit where he pretended to use the chainsaw to cut himself his privates off part of his stage show. And I would have to take off the chain.
You know,
so he would. It looked like he was really using the chainsaw.
Oh my god!
Yeah. So it was very much like your start. It was, you know, very journalistic. Covering
oh sure. Oh yeah. Hardcore.
Very much like that.
Did you have to plan? I have to ask because I listened to Steve and Gary and Wendy and Bill back on Q101 and Kevin Matthews. Did you plan the prom? Remember the Kev had prom?
Oh, no. I was around for that.
Oh,
no,
I always wanted to go, and I was always a little too young. You know, my parents would be like, you can't go to that. You have to be 21.
Yeah,
to
no,
go
by then
the
I was
prom.
Full-time with Stephen Geary, and my job was to, you know, book the guests and stuff like that and come up with, you know, bits for them to talk about. And every day I would come up with a rundown sheet of what I thought the show was going to be. And then Steve would walk in and crumple it up, or, you know, depending on how the day was. You know, he had an argument with his wife, and the first 45 right. minutes would be about that. And, you know, you really couldn't plan it. But every day I had to have that just in case.
Do you feel that that made for great radio?
Absolutely.
Just exactly what you're describing,
it
is that
totally
you got the rundown and then...
spontaneous. His show was total, and Stephen Gary, they were totally spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And these were remarkable comedians and remarkable men with words.
Right.
I mean, like we've talked, I think the one bond we all probably have is writing. I mean, or use of words appropriately. I mean, we were, it's a lost art form just because I don't think it's practiced as much, but to think of what these guys did without the visuals for decades, and they're still talked about.
Well, you know, they did 4.5 hours of comedy material every day.
Every day. That's a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think people realize, I mean, that the prep that goes into it, 4.5 hours, or 1 hour, let alone four and a half every single day.
Yeah, but the pressure of having to come up with that every day really helped me as a writer. When I went with John Landecker's show later, 10 years later, that was part of my job, was to come up with the show. And John was much more friendly with suggestions. You know, he wanted more information, more bits and stuff. And having to do that every day will make you a good writer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People who come on this show always refer to several people who either inspired them or served as sort of mentors. Stephen Gary are big names on this program when people come on and talk about who inspired them. And the other two are Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson.
Yeah.
In fact, Anna DeVlantis a few weeks ago was saying that she knew it was time for bed after she was, you know, you hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then you see Bill and Walter, and you're in that seat now.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that is so cool.
It's the most remarkable thing, and I've got a funny story about Walter. So it was kind of the waning days of Bill and Walter at WBBM-TV, and when I started there, you know, I was huge, knew mainly Bill Curtis through his documentary work, and Walter came up to me one day, and he says, "You are a great writer. You're doing fantastic work." And I said, "Walter, you kidding me?" I said, that means a lot. He says, "I absolutely mean it, Greg." And, you know, he may have gotten my name wrong. I'm Brad. But, you know, he was noticing was on TV. So it was, and then I got a really neat tweet from Bill Curtis when I was named the main anchor. And he's something along the lines of, "Hopefully we'll be making journalism fashionable again."
That's cool.
I mean, these guys, I mean, and I think about them and what I do daily, because these guys were the original investigative anchors.
Right.
I mean, we forget about, you know, sometimes Walter would become mocked for really almost his groundbreaking work of becoming a homeless man and doing
remember
a
that?
Sweep series on that.
But,
I mean, we also got to remember, I mean, he was the only guy who ever interviewed Gacy.
Right.
And how much insight that gave us. And then what Bill Curtis did on, I mean, so many different levels. I mean, including name slips me right now, but the discovery of the tapes of the gentleman who killed all the nurses.
Oh, Speck.
Speck.
Richard Speck.
He got a hold of those tapes of Speck in prison doing drugs.
Oh, those were very disturbing.
Oh, completely.
I can't get that vision out of my mind.
Me neither. Right?
But, you got to remember these guys are known as anchors. But, I mean, they were first and foremost truly investigative and interested journalists.
Absolutely. As are both of you. We're going to talk more about your investigative reports and more about Rick's books that coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, David. It's 7:34 on 720 WGN. Andrea and the reporters, Rick Kampfer, Brad Edwards are my guests tonight, and we're talking all about journalism and first jobs that they had. And I want to talk a little bit about what you both are doing now. I mean, we know we pop on the TV, we see you at 5, 6, 10, Brad, on Channel 2. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Because you've been doing it how long, how many months?
8 months.
8 months now.
Yeah, so still a rookie to it, but...
kind of walk me through. I mean, you've been an investigative reporter for many years.
Yeah.
And to make that transition, to me, we were saying this before the show, it's a no-brainer to have your main anchor be an investigative reporter.
I mean, you would think so. I mean, that has been, you know, a lot of the great successful main anchors, whether nationally or locally, and I think about Murrow, Rather, I mean, they all have that experience of investigative reporting or war reporting or reporting on a government beat or something like that. I mean, I had always thought it made sense, but for a long time, you didn't see that a lot in local news because that type of reporter or reporting didn't lend itself to this paradigm of the male anchor that had been created that persisted from the, you know, kind of 90s into almost now sometimes. So I, you know, came here as a general assignment reporter, then 4 or 5 years as a CBS2 investigator. And then when this opportunity came along, it really came along because we went through a management change and brought in a manager that is 100% straightforward on accountability journalism, data journalism, true fact driven storytelling, not just facts of the day, but, you know, what does data tell us? What does empirical data tell us? Big on FOIA, big on, waiting until the story is ready. And he made the move for me, and, you know, I've said it's, you know, the greatest gig I've ever had, definitely a dream gig on like a lot of levels. But, you know, people say, what happened when you first got the promotion? And I went out and I bought a nice bottle of Lafroy scotch and I sat down and I had a sip of it. And then I updated my LinkedIn because it is also probably the most insecure job, yeah. As most would know, in probably Chicago television land. I just say, you know, ask Lester Holt how his job at CBS2 worked out. So I realize it may not be forever, but while it's here, we're going to do the best we can with it.
And I said to you, too, I love what Tu is doing. I love you anchoring the news.
Thank you.
Not just because we're friends and you're good. But with Ryan now going from sports to morning anchor, it's a bold move, but it's a great move.
Yeah, a guy that knows the city, knows the market, U of I guy. I mean, born and raised here. And, you know, morning, he brings a sense of levity and a certain energy that it's needed. And, you know, sports guys sometimes are the most brilliant guys. Like, if you ever see probably the best people to do breaking news, it's a sports guy, because I mean, they've done play-by-play at some point in time in their past, and they know how to fill time
right and think quick, right,
little nuggets of information. So it's not even something I really thought about, but really have a forward-thinking news director who made that move with Ryan, and we're thrilled Ryan, you know, accepted it, and he's kicking butt at the mornings, and I'm having a lot of fun at night and still having fun with the investigative reporting, you know, as much as I can do.
All right, I got a segue to you, Rick. When we're talking about quick thinking, I mean, you went from radio programming 4.5 hours a day, boom, boom, things changing like that, to this world of being an author and a successful author at that, too, with 8+ books. This is your 8th book, Every Cub Ever. What was that transition like?
Well, it's kind of weird not having immediate feedback. Like, when you're working on a book, sometimes for 6 months or 8 months, you don't really know what you have.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a year later, somebody will finally see your finished product. But for this book, for Every Cub Ever, which is my latest book, available, everycubever.com, and the new one, the new updated version is out today as far as for pre-orders. But anyway, it was, you know, a labor of love for me. Every day I would get to work on, you know, finding out about all these players that played for the Cubs. And literally, I wrote about every single Cub who ever played, going back to 1871.
Right. And Curtis and I, before the show, Curtis is a big sports fan. You have your podcast, too, your Cubs podcast. And I know you're a sports producer at heart, even though you love producing my show, right, Curtis? But so we were testing each other with your book. Matt Merton. You know, I'm like, they're all in there. It's Every Cub Ever, Curtis.
Every single one.
Yeah, they're all here. I'm checking
it. In alphabetical order.
Right? They're all
Todd
in
Walker.
There. Yeah. Scott Sanderson.
Yeah.
May he rest. All right, so I have to ask you guys. I know this will be asking you, like, which is your favorite parent or your favorite sibling, but there's got to be, maybe not a favorite book in your case, story in your case, Brad, something that really impacted you, you know, and it may not be the one that stands out the most, but is there a story that you covered or just something that you followed that really really stuck with you and really hit home, kind of a most memorable moment for you?
Well, for me, it was a story in, and I've got several of them, but I think I have picked my favorite child. It was a voicemail that came in, and I was working in Detroit. We had launched a newscast there called The Edge. I was at the Fox station, and I was a single reporter for it and the primary fill-in anchor. And I got a voicemail one day, and it was a woman named Maribel, and it's kind of hard to imitate her voice, but she said, they're shooting every night. Bang, bang, bang. They shoot every night. Nobody hears my screams. And I went to the news meeting, and I just played the voicemail. And I said, we got to check this story out.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out there, and we found this 80-something Jewish lady, Maribel Channon. And she lived on a street called Robinwood, which was a half mile from Woodward Avenue in Detroit. And Woodward is famed for being the first mile of paved roadway in America. And her street was absolutely decimated. And this was at probably the downfall of the downfall in Detroit. This was when GM was going bankrupt and Ford was trying to hold on. Chrysler would go bankrupt. Kwame Kilpatrick, their mayor, one time people thought might be the first black president, Barack Obama. But, you know, then he got in trouble, went to federal prison. But we went to Maribel's house and she cried, and she just wanted Detroit to come back. And we did this story on her. The papers did stories on her, and she was remarkable character. And we couldn't get her out, though. We just couldn't get her to leave. And finally, after a couple months of doing stories, we let it be. And 6 months later, I got a call from the Detroit morgue in Wayne County. And a source there said, remember that gal you did a story on, Maribel? I said, yeah. He said, she's dead. She's been here for 4 months and nobody's claimed her body. From there, we did this exhaustive search to find a relative, and we found a third cousin in Florida who released her body. We had a funeral for her, and 200 viewers actually came to the funeral. A young man played this most amazing rendition of Amazing Grace. We found her parents, buried her next to her parents. Then from there, did a further expose on the 100 plus unclaimed bodies at the Detroit morgue, whether they were left there for mainly economic reasons. Also, Detroit's morgue was troubled at the time. They were using freezer trucks to take care of bodies. In the end, after a half-hour special, Time Magazine eventually came in and did some reporting on the death and possible life of Detroit, they titled it. We got 100 bodies buried and fast-tracked an expansion of the Detroit County Morgue by 40%. And at one point in time, we went out to her house after we did the story, and her house was ransacked and pillaged like they do after someone dies. Thieves come in and just take stuff. And well, my photographer was taping me, and I found this picture of what was a beautiful woman. And I knew Maribel as this downtrodden 80-something-year-old with frazzled, you know, white hair. And I said, I wonder if this is her. And the frame dropped out of the picture and shattered on the ground. And sure enough, it was her. And the family wanted it. And I said, what, are you going to take that picture? It's my, you know, Maribel's my muse.
Yeah.
So I gave it to her family. And 2 weeks later, they sent me this most remarkably framed picture. It's a beautiful frame of the broken frame with her picture inside.
And wow.
It's in my...
you keep that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the three or four things I have hanging to this day.
That's amazing.
And it was all from a voicemail.
God, that's an amazing story, how you took it from the voicemail.
Yeah.
That's to me, a true investigative story.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a true, you have to have that interest in people, but it's also like, you've got to realize, like in To Kill a Mockingbird, I mean, there are a lot of Tom Robinsons out there, you know. It's not, a lot of people have, you know, especially in Chicago where corruption is so rampant. I mean, mm-hmm. But you got to realize for this esoteric term we called corruption, for all these people making money, other people are losing out on things.
Yeah.
And she was one of those people, and I learned a lot of lessons about, you know, not only the importance of making phone calls and following up, but just empathy, you know, even empathy for the bones in the Detroit County morgue. Mm-hmm. You know, they're people too.
And what it leads to in just different facets whole culture and stories.
Right, with powerful visuals and character development. It wasn't me who did all of that. I didn't fast track an expansion, but the story provoked people to do something. You know, I didn't start a fund, but an organization started a fund to, you know, so it was.
Well, you found the family, though.
It was what the story, when people hear, there's still good people out there that want to do right and help. And, you know, when they see. And it's the importance of good, compelling television. And, you know, so sometimes people ask me, like, what I want to do and what you want to do on radio, what we want to do in newspapers, what Rick wants to do with books, what I want to do on TV. I mean, we got to save these mediums. These are important things that people know about. That was one of those that we did there.
Awesome story. It's Brad Edwards. Rick, we're going to have the same question for you. Quick break, though, and more after this on 720 WGN. On 720 WGN. About 10 more minutes of Andrea and the reporters, then Justin Kaufman and Extension 720 is coming up next. Brad Edwards and Rick Camp for my guest tonight on the program. All right, Brad, we asked you this question. Now I have to ask Rick. Father Knows Nothing, Humor Chicago Bundle, The Living Wills, Records Truly Is My Middle Name, Every Cub Ever. These are just some of your books. We don't have enough time in the program to name all of them, but. What was the hardest one to write, and did you have one that you really enjoyed writing a little bit more than maybe the others?
Yes, I did. It was probably Father Knows Nothing, which is a book that was really a compilation of 10 years of writing. I was a columnist for the Northwest Indiana Times, and they had a bunch of different publications. And my job every week was to come up with 800 words about parenting. Mm-hmm. I have three boys, and they were little at the time. And it was a humor column. Mm-hmm. So I had spent my whole week, every week, looking for the funny in life.
Sure.
And if you look for that, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you'll discover is if you spend your whole time looking for funny, you're going to be a very happy person. And so those 10 years I wrote that column were my favorite. That was my favorite time. And when I put the book together, it was like putting together the childhood of my three boys. And they love that book, even though, you know, I tell embarrassing stories about them. But mostly I'm the butt. It's called Father Knows Nothing.
Yeah.
But so that's my favorite book.
That's kind of fun. And I like the picture, too, with your kids and then your wife kind of looking over your shoulder. She is a saint, by the way.
She is.
You know that.
She is. Well, what happened was I was in radio.
I got to know, because that just sounds like such a difficult task. How old were these kids? What are their age separations?
So when I first came home, I was working in radio, and our show got canceled, the John Landecker show. And at that time.
No, a show on radio got canceled?
First
Come
time
on.
Ever.
You're
kidding me. First
no.
time ever. At that time, my boys were 3 years old, 7 and 10, and my wife wanted to go back to work, and I decided to become a full-time writer, so I decided to stay at home. And so it was the perfect timing, but I didn't have any idea how to be a dad. I was the breadwinner. I'd come home and, you know, we'd play, and that's all I did, basically. Yeah. I thought I was doing a lot. I found out quickly that I was not. I was not doing anything.
Right.
And so I learned on the job, and we, you know, my boys are a little damaged because of that, but it was fun. And, you know, even to this day, that's the book that they bring to school. All their teachers have seen it. And now two of them are in college. One has actually graduated from college already.
Wow. Where does the time go?
24-year-old, a 21-year-old, and my youngest is now a junior in high school.
It's crazy how the time goes.
And
right?
I try to pick up on an anecdote or something every day, because there's always something that's lucky. We work in these jobs, we're going to learn things. But I like that if you look for funny, you're going to be happier.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more.
Your Every Cub Ever, the new edition, came out today,
it's
available. What is after this? Do you already have an idea for another book?
I do, but I don't want to say what it is.
No, you don't have to say.
But Every Cub Ever is one of these books that, because I write about literally every single cub that ever played, I have to update it every year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's obsolete. So I spent the last 4 weeks writing about all the cubs that played this year in 2019, and got a little bit out of my system because it was not a great year.
Yeah.
And that book is at the press right now being published, and it'll be ready to go by mid to late November. And you can pre-order it now at
Amazon or
everycupever.com.
Okay. Perfect. Very good. Order two, Cochran
yes.
always says.
Perfect Christmas
You're clumsy,
present.
You'll lose one. All right, Brad, you're still an investigative reporter at heart, even though we watch you every single night on the 5, 6, and 10 o'clock news.
Yeah, hopefully.
What story? Is there something? Is there another story? Something well, kind frankly, of that you're chasing or that you want
I've,
to?
I've had a couple really good ones lately, but I'm most proud of. We did a series of stories on wrong raids by the Chicago Police Department over the last year. I mean, wrong raids, like abysmal failures in the system where kids, you know, all of a sudden wake up to guns in their faces and cops find out they have the wrong address. I mean, we are talking over and over and over again, and it caught the attention of CBS Evening News. So tomorrow night on the Evening News with Nora O'Donnell, they will be doing a several minute piece highlighting the work of investigative reporter Dave Savini, who will also be out in New York with her. Chicago police have not commented on it. They've stonewalled us. At one point in time, they said our ratings weren't good enough for them to reply.
Wow.
So now it is going to be on the big show on the network, we wonder if we'll get a reply. But it's part of a cool thing about being an investigative reporter, being on a radio show. I mean, when you work intimately with a team of other investigative reporters, so I'm really proud of the work Dave and his team have done. And we had a half-hour documentary on it, commercial-free, and now it's going to be on the Evening News. So I'm proud of that, and that's tomorrow night, 5:30. So I can't wait to see it.
When you all get together, because you are part of the investigative team, which is just, I think it's fabulous. I think the work that you do is just, it's excellent.
At its best, it's important.
It's extremely important, and it is life-changing, because you have, you know, stories that you have done have changed the way things are and have changed laws. So when you guys all get together, is it like, hey, let's just kind of throw these ideas around and
yeah, I mean, often we compare notes. Often we try to help each other with sources. There's always often a level of jealousy and competitiveness in the room, too.
A little bit,
which there needs to be, and it makes us all better.
Yeah.
You know, Dave's on Nora O'Donnell tomorrow. I'm like, okay, well, ours set higher, you know. Right.
But he's not here tonight.
Right. Yeah, right.
Aim for that 60 minutes bit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're going to see you on 60 minutes at some point.
Yes, it is. And it's at its best. I mean, that's when you get it. And we've really... In prior shops, there are sometimes walls built between teams. So they have investigative team A, B, C, and D, and everyone's competing with each other. Now we've broken all those down. We get in the same room every other week. We talk about all our stories, and I'll be like, oh, I've got something on that. And Pam Zekman will tell me, oh, I've got a person you could talk to there.
Yeah. So she's great, too. She scares me, but I love Pam.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah, well, if I saw Pam... And she was coming after me.
Oh, I'd worry.
I would. Yeah. I mean, every day I see her and I hide under my desk, you know?
I don't even work with you and I still hide under my desk.
Yeah, right, so I'm with
you.
Yeah.
Brad, Rick, thank you guys so much. I mean, the work that you do is just awesome, and I'm so proud that you guys are in studio with me tonight. So where can we find you, Brad? On social media and on TV?
Yeah, social media, TV Brad, at Twitter, TV Brad, at Instagram, B.A. Edwards at CBS.com. If you've got any story tips, and then 5, 6, and 10 Monday through Friday at CBS Chicago. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, and congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you. Very
well deserved. I love seeing you now at 10 o'clock. Rick, tell us where we can find you too.
Well, I'm on Twitter, Rick Kempfer, K-A-E-M-P-F-E-R. I'm also Facebook. Eckhart's Press is my company. We're a publisher. If you like Chicago media stories, we have books by some of the greatest Chicago media types of all time. Check it out, eckhartspress.com.
Every Cub Ever. Remember, get two copies.
Everycubever.com.
Rick, Brett, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Have a great night. Extension 720 with Justin Kaufman is coming up next.